Blog Talk Radio.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child?
Good afternoon and welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and today we take 25 and continue our conversation about child safety. Today's show is titled My Privates Are Private, a book by our guest, Stacey Honowitz. Stacey will be taking your call shortly. The call-in number is 917-932-8900. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/NWCAVE and click today's show. Every Sunday in May, we've been taking 25. Take 25 is a campaign from our partners at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. To learn more about the campaign, log on to TAKE25.org. And to learn more about NCMEC, visit missingkids.com. If you see something, say something. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or 1-800-4-A-CHILD or 911 immediately if something is out of the ordinary that you're concerned about. So if you see something, please say something and make the call. Someone that has seen her share of things is our guest, Stacey Honowitz. Stacey she's 22-year veteran of the Florida State Attorney's Office, 17 years dedicated to Sex Crimes and Child Abuse Unit, where she is currently serving as the supervisor. She is also frequent legal commentary, who has provided legal analysis for Larry King Live, CNN Headline News, GMA, Dateline NBC, 48 Hours, and Fox News, to name a few. She has prosecuted several high-profile cases in South Florida and is also a guest lecturer who speaks about child sex abuse, the sensitive nature of these cases, the navigation of the criminal justice system, and the importance of frank and open communication with children about this important and difficult subject matter. She has provided important information for several years to both parents and children on issues of child molestation and continues to send her message of the importance of reporting abuse, which is the first step in healing. Stacey also serves as one of our National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation's founding advisors. She is here today to speak with us about her books, My Privates Are Private, and Genius with a Penis, Don't Touch. And we welcome Stacey with us. Hi, Stacey.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for doing this, especially since today is this weekend is a holiday weekend. But this wraps up our Take 25 series this month. We've been doing a Take 25 child safety show every Sunday in May, which represents the national Missing Children's Awareness Month and the Take 25 campaign with them. So we sure do appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to be here, and I think it's a wonderful campaign. So I got kudos to you for you know, getting everybody involved in something like this.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Let's talk a little bit about Betsy and Bobby, the characters in your two books. How did the books and the characters start, and why did you create them?
Well, like you told your listeners, I've been prosecuting these cases. It's 25 years now. It's 22 probably since the back on the bio on the book that talks about it was 22 years. And in all of those years that I'm prosecuting, parents would always say to me, I don't know how to talk to my children. I do so many cases, and I'd have the kids come in my office, and I'd ask them if anybody discussed private parts with them, and they would say no. And then when I lectured, and parents would say to me, it's so uncomfortable. You know, you can talk about it like it's nothing because you do it all day long. But what do I do? And so that's really how the books were created, because I thought I needed something, a vehicle for parents to be able to sit down with their kids and have this uncomfortable but delicate subject matter, you know, easy. I wanted to make it easy for them. And so the book was created. The two books with the two characters are adorable, funny little kids that really have a message. And the message is that if anyone ever touches you, you have to make sure to tell. you can't lie about it, and you can't be embarrassed by it. And so the books were born really for parents and for kids, but more so for parents because they were the ones that were having the difficulty. I find it's not the kids that have the problem in discussing it. It's the parents who are embarrassed by it.
Usually that's the situation. Parents think that they're doing a good deed by not talking about it and by protecting them from the reality of what really transpires. But in fact, in today's world, in the 21st century, it's doing more harm than good not having that conversation. I know that the illustrations are well designed in both of these books also. They're very user-friendly, no matter the age of reading the books. Are the books being used in schools? Because after I read My Privates Are Private to my two nieces last night, and mm-hmm. they really took to Betsy. And for me, we have a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old, and both of them seem very, you know, open to having the conversation, and the rhyming nature of the book took to them right away. And so my question is, you know, are these in the schools, or is it still a taboo subject for teachers and parents to have the conversation?
Well, I'm so glad you brought this up, because you brought up in one question all of the issues that I've been dealing with all these years. First of all, I couldn't get a publisher to even touch these. They didn't want to know from it. They told me it would never sell out on the open market, and they didn't think that talking about sex abuse was really that important. And my struggles with them were always, you have no idea how many cases I prosecute. You have no idea how fast growing my unit is. And if you would really come to court one day, you would get a feel for what really goes on out there. So reality, as you know, was really denial. That's the first thing. The mm-hmm. second thing is, I had a hard time because they told me that the rhyming nature of the book was difficult. My feeling in being, I think, having the finger on the pulse of what goes on in most schools, because I lecture all over, is that kids really get the message quicker when it's done in rhyming or limerick form. I think lots of times these books have a moral at the end of it, but the kids don't get the moral or the message. With rhyming, the message is out there, and it's easy for them in their minds to keep going. Like you told me early on that your niece was kind of singing about the book. And I think when you rhyme and you have words that rhyme, it's easy for them to remember and to get the message. So as far as it being in schools, you're right. The idea is still very taboo. Teachers, I don't think, want the responsibility of having to talk to their kids. The kids in the class, I think everybody seems to pass the buck. The parents don't want to deal with it. They almost want it to be in the schools, and the schools don't want to deal with it. They want the parents to take that responsibility. The feedback when people get the book is that they're grateful that it's fabulous and that they don't know what they would have done had they not had the book to guide them and to teach the children. So, as you know, I appear on TV quite often, and lots of times there's a surge in the sales of my book after I'm on the air. And then the feedback, which is so rewarding, is from the parents that tell me how much they enjoyed the book and how it was so easy for them to have this discussion. So, yes, to answer your question, it's still taboo, and I struggle and I fight with it every single day. And I said that I really wasn't going to stop until most of the schools saw how important this tool was. So,
this,
you know,
is such
a fight,
a friendly
every day.
Book. It's a friendly book. And if I may I read a couple of the pages?
Absolutely.
Okay. You start off by, on page 3, you open the book by saying, "Hi, my name is Betsy Boodle. I know I'm smart. I use my noodle." So I want to capture that, because noodle, my nieces never knew that their brain was considered a noodle. And
uh-huh.
we've been in the pool the last 2 days with those things that you float on that are called noodles.
Correct.
And so following reading this book, the 5-year-old has been running around saying, I have my noodle, and then would rhyme it with poodle, and then we'd start the conversation. So what did the book mean, though? And so just using that terminology, a 5-year-old for the last 48 hours has been singing a song that she's made up about the book. So that's how it starts off. But, you know, with the pages, like in the middle on page 8, I have lots of games that I play at home. Sometimes I love to chat on the phone. I love to laugh, to joke and talk, have cookies and milk and take long walks. I go to school. I just love to learn. Now, this is my 6-year-old going on 7 that started to understand these two pages. I stand in lunch lines and wait my turn. I run around at recess and play kickball. When school is over, I shop at the mall. And it just so happens when I was reading this, we had just gotten back from the mall from a movie yesterday. So
right.
So it was just it. So then when I turn to page 10 and I start reading in school, we learn lots of things, how grass grows and how a telephone rings. We even draw pictures in class called art. Sometimes we talk about our body parts. I can't think of a better segue into a very difficult conversation with a child than to have them already in tune with the book because of the previous pages, and then just going in, and then the illustrations with the boxes on the body parts are just, I mean, for a 5- and a 6-year-old, they got it, you know?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
so for
I mean, that's exactly what you're saying. I mean, you know, people said to me when I first told them about the book, they would say, oh, is it an instructional manual? And I said, no, it's a little kid's book that segues into talking about private parts. You can't start off on page 1 saying, this is my vagina or this is my penis. You can't do that with a 3-, 4-, or 5-year-old. You have to be able to gradually get them in tune, like you said, with the book, and then segue into something as important as body parts. So the illustrations were done. If you can see that the mouth on both Bobby and Betsy is exaggerated. I did that purposely so that it meant talk, send a message, don't be scared, use your big mouth if someone ever touches you and report it. So that was the theory behind the illustrations, and I'm so happy to hear that they enjoyed the book so much, and I wish people would give it a chance because they would see just how important the message is.
And I'm embarrassed to say you sent these to me a year ago when we got involved in NW Cave and we hadn't done a show, so I really hadn't whipped them out to read, but I wanted
right.
to read them because this hits close to home with somebody in our life, and I just had never read it. And so I thought, you know what, if I can't get the kids to listen to this book, how am I going to be able to talk to Stacy about it? So I pulled it
right.
out, and it was, I'll admit, as the aunt, I was very concerned with, okay, the last thing we need is them to go home and tell Mommy and Daddy what Aunt Shell was talking about to them.
Right.
But it was nothing like that when we got reading the book. I mean, you even go into, on page 12, you know, describing, I have 2 wrists, a waist, 10 toes, I have 1 head where my hair grows. I have 10 fingers, 2 ankles, and 2 ears, 2 eyes that sometimes shed tears, which to many of us know that if a child is going through this, they are shedding tears alone because they feel like that they can't talk to anyone. And so if a child is reading this book who has gone through something, already you've captured their attention, which means ultimately when you start getting to, and it's only 20 pages, this book.
Right.
So when you get to the back of the book where it says, you know, tell somebody, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your niece, you know, call the police. You know, it's, you've already gotten their attention. So and that's just me. I'm no expert in this, but I can tell you that I'm a huge advocate for talking about and communicating the issues that ultimately plague our society today in the 21st century with, Sandusky and everybody else that we're hearing from. And we have to wait until kids are now adults in order for them to talk about what's going on. And if we can only intervene beforehand, we'd be in a much better situation.
Well, that's what I said. I mean, the bottom line was these books are never going to prevent sexual abuse. We know that, but it's going to happen. But certainly it can empower a child. It can educate a child that instead of being a repeat victim, let's suppose that they're being, after being violated one time, instead of waiting 5 years to ever tell somebody about what happened, they can feel powerful enough after the first time to tell somebody so that the suspect and the pedophile and the person that the perpetrator has done this in can be punished. And that's really what the books were written for. It's nothing's ever going to stop sex abuse. We know that. Where there's a will, there's a way, and we'll go on. But certainly, to have this in your pocket, to know that someone will listen, that an adult will try to help you, that someone will believe you, it's power enough for a kid to feel like that they can come forward and talk about it. Where, as before, I think that they thought to themselves, if I tell, no one will believe me. If the perpetrator says to me, you know, no one will believe you, or I'll do this for you, or I'll do that for you. I mean, this is all about teaching. And even in 20 pages, Michelle, you're never going to get every message across. If I had every scenario, the book would be 400 pages. But it's up to the parent or the person that's reading it to the child to take those limericks and maybe follow up or add on to them or tell somebody, this is just the basis. And, you know, there's got to be, this is a conversation that goes on all the time. This is not a one-time situation. This is a conversation that you have to repeatedly have with your kids and not be afraid. I mean, I always tell people 10 minutes of uncomfortable reading a book to them is better than 5 years in the state attorney's office waiting to be heard or having to go in front of a jury. And really, that's what it boils down to. You know, you talk to your kids, what's their elbow, what's their toe, what's their knee, why can't you say vagina and penis? Because that's what they are. That's the anatomy of the body. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. So I'm hoping that this brings a little bit of mental easing, or, you know, for a parent to think that I'm not doing this alone, that I'm, you know, somebody's helping me. You have guidebooks for diet. You have guidebooks for meditation. You have guidebooks for how to plant something. Why can't you have a little guidebook of how to talk to your kids about something that's difficult?
Thank you.
And that's really hoping where the books go.
That's totally how I believe that this world should be, especially with internet crimes and issues that we have. If you can put a computer or a cell phone in the hand of a 7-year-old, you surely could put a manual as to the do's and don'ts on a computer before they start using it. And the same goes for this. As they grow up, instead of running from the, oh, what's this, mommy? What's that, daddy? You know,
Right. Talk
about them instead of running from it. I know, like on page 14, you write, below my waist, above my knee, is my private part that nobody sees. That is a place that nobody should touch, even if they say, I love you so much. And again, less is more. I've been a media consultant for 24 years, and I can say less is more, and that is a prime example of less is more. It's one sentence that basically comes right out and tells you, if someone is saying, I love you very much and this is okay, this book is telling you, no, it's not okay and it's not your fault. And I think It's such a strong message for a child to read and their parents alike. In regards to, I mean, like when we look at the national child abuse statistics, and again, we have Stacey Honowitz on the line. If you have any questions for her, we're talking about My Privates Are Private. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. But when you look at the national child abuse statistics, that every year 3.3 million reports of child abuse are made in the United States involving nearly 6 million children, the United States ranks worse in any nation, losing 5 children every day due to abuse. Out of these abuses of neglect, physical abuse, sexual abuse, medical neglect, etc., 9.2% of the abuse is because of sexual abuse, and yet no one is speaking about it, and no one is talking about it. And when you say more than 90% of the juvenile sex abuse victims, they know their perpetrators, so why is it so difficult to have the conversation when you know that most likely, especially in the news, we see that these people that come forward, whether adults or children, they know their perpetrator, you know?
Yeah.
And so why is it so hard? Why do you think it's so hard for parents to have that kind of communication with their child?
I just think that it's been, you know, closeted for so long. It's been so taboo. It's such a difficult subject. I think that the only time parents feel the need to sit down and talk to their kids is after a huge high-profile case breaks. After Sandusky, everybody was up in arms. after Jesse Dugard, everyone was up in arms. Elizabeth Smart, then all of a sudden everyone, you know, decided we need to get on a bandwagon and educate and talk to our kids. And you know what? That sounds good in theory. And it sounds good for the 3 days after the case runs on TV. And then all of a sudden the interest goes downward. Nobody wants to talk about it. If anybody knew how many cases, to have to say that your unit in the office is the fastest growing unit, it's not something to brag about in the state attorney's office. It's something to be really sad about, that child sexual abuse and child neglect is so prevalent in South Florida and in all the states in the United States. I just think that people feel that this topic is so difficult to talk about. And embarrassing, and especially if it's a family member or if it's the same sex, if it's man on boy or woman on girl. I mean, there's so many other tangents that go into people's minds. Now, is there going to be a fear of homosexuality, and is this young boy going to be able to talk about his uncle or his father or his stepfather? It's just so, and I hate to use the word incestuous, but that's basically what it is. If it happens within the family, if it's a neighbor down the street, you know, people know that if it goes to court, they're going to have to talk about it in the public arena. There's just so many, I wish I could pinpoint it. There's just so many factors that go into the silence of sexual abuse. And that's what I'm really trying to bring to the forefront, as I know you are too. It's just have a discussion about it. If you're open about it, and if your kids know what the reality is or what could happen if they don't tell, you know, I think people would realize that this is something that needs to be out there. We need to educate about it. It's the lack of education. It's the lack of people wanting to spend the money to educate, and it's the lack of responsibility that teachers want and sometimes even parents want. So there's many factors that go into why people don't tell. And I'm just hoping that this is just a little bit of knowledge that people can take with them and not be afraid. I'm really trying to start a movement of not being fearful. That's, again, why I wrote the books. There's such a fear factor. Even when I go to trial or I have cases, it's like I said earlier, it's not the kids that are afraid to go into court to talk about it. It's the parents' fear of people knowing that their child was a victim. And that's what I see quite often. I have people that don't want to prosecute because they don't want the neighbors to know that their kid was a victim. So all these things taken together, I think if parents would wise up, I think parents would know that it's not embarrassing, that it's a catharsis if their child's able to talk about it. Because later on in life, if you keep that secret, as I've seen with many of the victims in my cases who kept it secret for so long, their everyday lives become torturous because they have mental issues, they have relationship problems, they have trust issues. All these things come from being a victim of sexual abuse. And I think the healing can begin once somebody starts to talk about it and realize that somebody will help them.
Have the conversation. When childhelp.org reports that a child abuse report is made every 10 seconds, how many of those that are reported actually are looked into, investigated thoroughly, and possibly prosecuted? Would you say?
Well, I would love to say that every single case is investigated thoroughly. I can tell you that they're not. I mean, the report is made to the hotline, and the Child Protective Services is mandated to go out and begin an investigation. Now, what comes of that investigation, you know, it's difficult to say. Lots of times when the investigator goes out, then all of a sudden you have a recantation that it didn't happen or I don't want to talk about it. All of the Child Protective Services cases have to go to the police department, and then the police department makes a decision whether or not to forward that case onto the state attorney's office. Now, they're supposed to forward every case onto the state attorney's office, whether they arrest a perpetrator or not, and then we as prosecutors make that decision. I can't tell you, I can tell you that we average 20 new cases coming into the office a week in custody that have been arrested on cases. And once we even file the cases, if I file charges, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to see it come to fruition, because lots of times, like I said, into the prosecution, you have parents who want to pull back, who don't want to go forward, who see that it's difficult. It's not an easy situation to have to go through, and they decide that they don't want to go forward on it. So I wish I had a statistical number to tell you how many actually get to trial. All I can tell you is I think we average probably 15 to 20 new cases coming in during a week.
Holy
which is a pretty sad statistic. It's pretty sad.
It truly is. I mean, we've done so many shows on child abuse to domestic violence and human trafficking, and you know, a lot of folks will say, you know, not my child. My child won't be kidnapped. My child won't be raped. My child won't be trafficked. But in reality, what we try to educate our listeners, which we have on this particular show, a lot of downloads. I mean, our last show, Lured into Sex Trafficking, has been downloaded almost 1,000 times now. And so people are listening. And so the message we try to get out to everyone is it's everyone's problem. Because when it hits your pocketbook and it hits your taxes, it's your problem. And if you can do something to help prevent it or slow it down, you know, you should do that. We belong to an HOA, and of course, you know, our whole thing is, you know, turn off the lights when you're not using them at the pool house so that our HOA dues won't go up. It's our problem if they go up, you know. So it's everybody's responsibility in any kind of epidemic. And when you're seeing in 2008 reported by childhelp.org that an estimated annual cost of child abuse and neglect in the United States alone was $124 billion, that hits home. And that's where do you think the money comes from? It comes to all of us. And so it is our job if we see something, if something doesn't seem right next door, such as in the case in Cleveland, Ohio. As a prosecutor, Stacey, how can a man go through 10 years of having sex slaves in his basement and none of his family noticing anything out of the norm? How do you explain
That's a great question, because I could not, quite frankly, understand that. I don't know if maybe they turned it. I'm not saying that they knew 100% what was going on. But, you know, either he hid it extremely well or he never let them come into the house as family members. Maybe they were never, ever allowed to go into his house and certainly never took them out. So you would hope and you would pray that nobody really did know anything that was going on and was afraid to go to the police. Now, there are allegations that the police were called to the house for certain things, and the police say that they don't have a record of it, and that's going to have to be reconciled between the city and the callers who claim that they made phone calls. So
in J.C. Dugard's case, too.
Absolutely.
And look at the outcome
of
that.
Go out. You go out. He's a sexual predator. You go out to the house. You don't check the rest of the house. You don't go in. I know that the sweep team where I live, I mean, when they go in to make a sweep of sexual predators, they go in. They go in to see what's going on, to check around the house and stuff like that. In this case, it never happened. So you're going to find problems. You're going to see things fall through the cracks. It's bound to happen when you have cases of this magnitude. And that's why I tell people all the time, you only see the high-profile things. You only see the big things that make every headline news show. You have to come in. You should really, really go to your local courthouse and sit in with the sex crimes unit or sit in on a case and see just how much of this actually goes on. Because I think that's another misnomer that the public thinks, that there's only a few cases because the press only covers the really high-profile ones. This stuff goes on every single day in masses, in every county, in every state of the United States, and Europe and Asia and all over, too. This With internet porn and with the internet and with the media and the way that things are portrayed in the media, I hate to say it, but that has sexualized our nation. It really has. We have become a sexual nation. I have 5- and 6- and 7-year-old girls in my office that only know the moves from Britney Spears and Rihanna, and they know how to swivel their hips and thrust and do all those things. And you ask them, where did you learn that? They've learned it on TV or they've seen it on a video. And that's another thing I try to educate parents about. You know, it might be cool to put on, you know, a video, but not if the girl is taking her top off and not if she's gyrating her hips, because that's how kids learn. And parents are not in tune with that. Parents are not in tune that they have to be, if a kid's going to sleep at somebody's house, they have to know ahead of time. If there's an older brother there, if an older brother tries to touch them, you know, people don't realize the extent of what could actually go on. And I do because I see it and I prosecute it every day. And that's when I go out and I try to educate parents that you have to be really more in tune with what's going on in the schools and more in tune with what's going on at your friends' houses.
And know who the children, even if they're 10 or 17, are doing on the computer and who they're chatting with, as well as Xbox Live. We're not a fan of Xbox Live. I did not realize that they communicate with strangers. And just like on Facebook or Twitter, if you're telling people you're out of town for the weekend on vacation, you're welcoming burglars to rob you. So why
Absolutely.
In the world would you be posting stuff? You know, I know adults that post stuff. You know, they'll take their picture. I know this CEO of this corporation, and he's so proud of his abs. And I use him as an example on all these shows because he takes a picture of himself and posts it for the world to see on Facebook and Twitter. And it's like, you're an advocate against internet crimes. Why would you post this about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what
I know.
We're trying to tell the teens not to do. But because, you know, everyone can stay connected that way, we and I'm to blame at times too. I'll post things that, why did I post that, you know? But once it's posted, you can't take it back.
Right.
With internet, you mentioned internet crimes and porn and such, and I know that, you know, we have the Jane Velez Mitchell Journalism Award that we do with Jane, and she's a huge advocate against addiction to porn and such. How far does porn addiction, you know, go as far as perpetrators? Do, you know, there's a lot of people that say that those that are addicted to porn won't stray and be your type of sexual abuser, kidnapper, or a perpetrator that will sexually abuse someone. And then you have
that's
the other
true.
People saying that's not true. So,
I mean,
what do you
first
say?
Of all, you're never going to be able to get anyone that's going to give you a study on how many people that watch internet porn then go out and rape children. Because the one thing that we know about sex crimes and profiling is you can never profile a sexual predator. I've prosecuted the richest of rich, the poorest of poor, and black and white, and educated and not educated. So there's never going to be able anybody to come up and say, this is a pedophile. And so it works the same way with someone that sits in front of a computer all day looking at internet porn. You can never ever predict if that person is so tied into the porn, let's say child pornography, that he doesn't feel like he has an opportunity or he sees what's going on, that he wants to go out and do what he sees on the computer. So we never really cross lines that way. We never say, oh, well, you know what, he's just somebody that is an exhibitionist, because an exhibitionist can then turn into somebody that wants to touch kids or have somebody touch them. So we have seen a rise of sex cases, I can tell you, since porn on the internet has become so accessible. We've seen a ton of kiddie porn cases where these individuals share porn between each other, and we're hoping that we get the one person that maybe then will talk about all the other people that he's been involved with. But the amount of kiddie porn in the last 5 years, our case count with regard to going to want to meet a kid that they've met on that they've chatted with on the computer or traded kiddie porn with, has increased substantially. And so, like I said, I wish that I could say to you, oh, that's just the person that watches it and is not going to do anything, but I would never be able to do that. And I wouldn't, and I don't think anybody would be able to predict that kind of behavior. Sexual deviancy and sexual behavior when it comes to kids can never, ever be predicted.
Or underestimated at what they're going to definitely do. We had one person that had emailed a question in regards to how can you prove if you know someone is participating in kiddie porn and such, which is illegal in all states? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so how would one be able to get police to take notice of what's going on that individual's computer if you don't have probable cause to serve a warrant?
Well, without divulging what the investigative tools are, I can just tell your listeners or your emailers that there are task force set up in every agency usually that specifically only deal with the computers and the workings of computers and being able to tell who's doing what. And so they are on top of it. They know who's doing it, who's trading, who's trying to get into certain chat rooms. And I will leave it at that because there are investigative tools that we use that the police are very in tune with because this has become such a problem all over the country.
It is really out of control, and we started a task force at NWCAVE called Operation Runway because a lot of the girls are being lured on modeling websites and things of that nature. And there's a question that was asked of one of the teens that had posted, and this guy even responded in an email knowing she was underage if she would pose nude and do sex scenes. And she even told him in the email string that she was underage and she wasn't going to be 18 until March. And he said, well, could you do it in February? To us, to the parents, they couldn't understand why the police could not go and have probable cause to go knocking at that guy's door. And in that particular case, the police never did. And to me, that looks like solicitation if in black and white right there in front of you. But that's my opinion. But
No, it does sound like that. And you know, that's the other scary part of the sex crime world that I, you know, unfortunately live in through work. It's not just the children's books that I've written to talk about private parts and stuff like that, but we've come to an age where everyone relies on the computer for everything. So it's every parent needs to take the time to talk to their kid about being on the computer. That's what pedophiles want. They want to be behind the screen. It's not the guy down the street anymore, you know, with a trench coat and a van that's waiting to touch your kid. It's somebody that's sitting in his room behind a computer that's chatting away with a child who maybe is vulnerable or going through a bad time or doesn't like his parents, and talking that kid into something that is, at the end of the day, going to be something horrible. And that's what we see a lot of. A lot of kids sneaking out of the house to be with people, and then they end up missing. A lot of kids that rely on somebody on the computer who's telling them that they'll take care of them and they'll give them whatever they want. And if your parents don't understand you, I do. So pedophiles are master manipulators. And what they try to do is they try to gain the trust of children, and I'm not talking little kids, I'm talking, you know, teenagers that are having difficult times. And then unfortunately, as you know, I end up on shows every other night talking about, you know, a kid who's been lured or a kid who ran away with somebody they met on Facebook or, you know, MySpace, things like that. So, you know, the computers, while fabulous in some respects, really have made my job much more difficult in the sense that we are overwhelmed with cases because so much of this behavior is going on. And so I urge parents who are listening, I urge parents when I go out and lecture, that this is something that you have to talk about and you have to let them know. And I believe seriously in the scared straight method. I believe in being honest and telling your kid, hey, this little girl ended up missing. I know parents kind of want to shield their kids from the bad news and stuff like that, but sometimes it scares them straight into behaving a proper way and knowing that if someone's trying to talk to them or says to them, just meet me out here or just meet me on the corner or just meet me for ice cream, that it could really turn into something horrific. So, you know, if anybody's listening, if your parents of teenagers, of parents of any child of any age, please let them know that the computer, while doing good for some things, also has a very seedy, dark side to it.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, I know here in the Portland metro area, we had a couple years ago, it came out 200 underage, I guess they were level one sex offenders, they had to be listed as, and they're in high school, and they're high school kids, mostly boys. They may have, shown their private parts, or they may have touched a girl, or they may have been dating a girl under 18, whatever the case may be. But it was appalling to hear that there were so many underage kids that were in the system as a level one sex offender because of whatever transpired. And those are just the ones that were obviously prosecuted. But then we see that a lot of the kids that are being trafficked, or a lot of the girls that are being trafficked, are recruited by teenage boys, some girls, but mostly boys. And so the perpetrator is no longer, like you said, the man in the trench coat or the guy at the park. It's a guy behind the computer, or worse yet, now it's the kid at the mall hanging out with your daughter. And,
correct.
And that's the sad reality. So how does a parent... It's one thing to talk about stranger danger and talking about, you know, you don't talk to people you don't know and things of that nature. But how do you warn them about being safe around kids their own age?
Well, you have to let them know that someone can violate them who's not 10 years older than that, that somebody can violate them who is the same age. And just because the person's the same age doesn't make them less culpable. In other words, even if you think that that person's 15 years old and it's a 15-year-old boy is coming near, just because he's 15 doesn't give him the right because you're the same age. I mean, you have to be honest. I mean, that's the only way that I can tell parents to talk to their kids. You cannot sugarcoat things. You have to be able to tell them in no uncertain terms that anybody that goes near you, whether the same age or whether they're sexting pictures to you or touching you at a party, that has to be reported, and you have to call us. You know, you have to know that if somebody makes you feel uncomfortable, you can't be afraid to tell us. So, you know, I'm not a parenting expert. I've never professed to be a parenting expert. I think a lot of it is common sense. Unfortunately, people don't use their common sense because they're too scared. The topic is so difficult to talk about that their common sense kind of goes out the window. Instead of talking about it openly and honestly, they keep it bottled up until, God forbid, something bad really happens. And then they say, oh, I really should have talked about it with somebody. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being open and honest. And like I said, 10 minutes of an uncomfortable situation certainly is going to beat 5 or 10 years waiting in the state attorney's office and talking to police officers and having to be deposed and talking to victim advocates and counselors. I mean, it's a conversation. You talk about everything else. You talk about school. You talk about camp. You talk about things that are going on. You need to talk about what really goes on in the world. Here's what could happen if you find yourself in this situation. Here's what the police can do if you find yourself in this situation. Here's what someone can say about you if you associate with people that are in a bad situation. I always urge parents to take their kids to juvenile court because it's a wake-up call. It's a real wake-up call to see 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old boys and girls walking around in shackles and chains and having to go to a juvenile center because of stupidity that they got involved in. Because it's not stupidity when the criminal justice system gets involved. It's criminal. And then as a juvenile, if you get yourself involved in all those things, it's not juvenile court anymore. It's big boys court. And so, you know, letting them know that the criminal justice system exists for the benefit of punishing bad people and for helping victims. And you don't want to end up on either end. You don't want to be the one being punished, and you don't want to be the one to be victimized. So, like I said, common sense should dictate what you should talk to your kids about, and you shouldn't be fearful of it. Fear is not empowering. Talking about it is what empowers kids to be able to talk about it.
How often do you find that stories that children are telling police or family members are not true? You know, their accusations towards someone touching them. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, how do we know it's just not their imagination?
I would say 10% of my cases, I would say, are false allegations.
So it's
very
really
low.
A low number.
Yeah,
it's
really low.
Trust,
I mean,
the child.
Stories? Yeah, I'm sorry?
Yeah, trust the child.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we vet out the best we can, and we have some cases where kids come in and maybe somebody doesn't believe what's going on, and we have a roundtable discussion. We go over the interviews. We cross-examine. We do everything in our power to get or to break a kid. I hate to use that term, but if we think that a child's lying. And sometimes it is a kid that's troubled, a kid that's having a hard time at home, a kid that's going through a divorce. Maybe at one point mom said, hey, say that dad touched you, so that dad should say that mom touched you in order for custody. But there really are few and far between. That a kid is able to keep up a story as detailed as it intends about sexual abuse. But there, you know, after years of experience and doing this, you kind of get a feel, you do get a feel for what's true and what's not. Is there ever a mistake made? I cannot ever tell you. that someone has told us it happened, we've gone ahead and filed it, and later on we found out that it was a false claim, and we, you know, dispose of the case, you know, right then and there. But I can tell you in my experience, I can honestly tell you probably 10% of the allegations that come in are false allegations.
Well, for those listening on the show tonight, we're speaking with Stacey Honowitz. We only have a few minutes left. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. We really encourage folks to log on to StaceyHonowitz.com, where you can purchase the books and see what Stacey's up to. You also go out and public speak on this topic, do you not?
Yes, I lecture all over. About sexual abuse, about the books, about how to talk to your kids about private, all the stuff that we discussed today is what I do in private lectures, you know, for schools and organizations and, you know, all over the country, because it's difficult, like I said, it's awkward for a lot of people, but I think once they sit in on a lecture and once they realize that it's not as hard to talk about as maybe they thought, I think the anxiety in having the discussion is way worse than the actual discussion itself. And once you have the discussion the first time, it's become so simple. It's easy. You can have it all the time without feeling embarrassed. It's that initial conversation that I think freaks parents out. But I urge all of your listeners, anybody that's logging on or listening today, to take the time to digest what's been talked about, read the articles, see what's going on in your local news, see the headlines that are on the air every night, realize it's an epidemic in our country now, sexual abuse, with predators and offenders and registered and all those things, and take the time to sit and talk to your kid. And even if it's over ice cream or over dinner or a place and a time when you feel comfortable, just do it. Don't be afraid. Just do it the one time, and you'll see it's not hard.
Have the conversation and take 25, and that's what the campaign has been about since April 1st. It runs through June 15th. Take 25. Basically, take 25 minutes every day, every week, once a month, but take the 25 minutes to sit down and chat with the kids about other things than what's happening on a game or what's happening in a music video. Talk about what shouldn't be happening in those things, and talk about the safety to keep your kids safe. It only takes 25 minutes, and you can learn more about Take 25 at take25.org or at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You can log on to missingkids.com. And if you see something, say something, call the National Child Abuse Hotline at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. Or if you know of a child that just doesn't seem like that they should be in the company of the person down the street or living next door to you, or you know that there's a sex predator that shouldn't have any children around them, call 1-800-THE-LOSS or 911 immediately. Stacey, any last thoughts or anything you want our listeners to leave with? We can encourage them to get your book. I mean, it's the best way to start a conversation, in my opinion, but I may be a little biased, but it's definitely a great book, and my only regret is that I waited a year to read it. But I'm
glad
you did it now.
Better late than never. That's what I would encourage. Yeah, and that's what I would encourage your listeners today. For those of you that have never had this discussion because you just didn't know how to do it, start. Really, because it's so important. As Michelle said, if you see somebody or something that just looks not kosher, funky, somebody down the street, the kid is crying, he doesn't want to be with this person. If you notice behavior that's out of the ordinary, that your child doesn't want to be in the company of a certain adult, that cries every time they have to be with that person. If there's an adult around your child who spends too much time doting on your child, all of us have friends that love our kids, you know, that the great uncle or the fun aunt or whatever. But if there's someone in particular that wants to spend an enormous amount of time with your child, offers to babysit at all times, offers to pick up your child or take your child, ask your child later on, is anything about him make you feel uncomfortable? Because lots of times that's how relationships start. It happens right in front of our eyes. Lots of times we think that a person's being so nice to our child, and isn't this person so fabulous, and really there's an ulterior motive behind it. So keep your eyes and your ears open, and most importantly, just use your common sense. Better safe than sorry. Report something and let it pan out to nothing later on, rather than not reporting it at first and it turns into something really major and you've overlooked it. So just a few little things for you to do. Don't freak out. Don't have anxiety. Just have the conversation. You'll see it'll pay off in the end.
Well, thanks for being with us, Stacey. You might be interested in tuning in on June 21st. Our next show is scheduled for Voices for Justice. Then that Friday, we're going to have actress Gloria Loring on, who was sexually abused by her father as a child. And obviously, she overcame a lot in order to be where she is today. And so she is going to have a Voice for Justice on June 21st. And we sure do appreciate you taking the time to come on. And every day you're on HLN or any of the networks, you're having a voice for justice for the kids, the families, and those that you represent too. So we sure do appreciate you being out there.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on. It was a pleasure, and I will speak to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Stacey. We're going to end the show with the introduction of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in its entirety. It's a six-minute soundbite of who NCMEC is. And we take 25 each and every day at the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation. Get to know who we are at NWCAVE. And please have a voice for justice. And take a few minutes right now and listen to John Walsh and his great organization he co-founded.
Hi, I'm John Walsh. Most of you probably know me as the 25-year host of America's Most Wanted. What you may not know is that it was the murder of my 6-year-old son, Adam, in 1981 that transformed my life's work to fight back, help victims, put bad guys behind bars. We knew that new laws were needed to help child victims. We worked hard, and it led to the passage of the Missing Children's Act of 1982. Then in 1984, the Missing Children's Assistance Act helped establish the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. This resource works in partnership with the U.S. Department of Justice and is the nation's leading organization addressing the problems of missing and exploited children.
With its headquarters located outside of Washington, D.C., the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is a highly rated 501c3 nonprofit organization. The National Center also operates 4 regional offices across the United States. Many of the more than 300 professional staff members and 700 volunteers have law enforcement backgrounds from local, state, and federal agencies. Since its founding almost 30 years ago, the organization has increased its recovery rate from 62% in 1990 to more than 97% today. Technology and innovation is a big key to this success.
The primary mission of the Missing Children's Division is to deliver technical assistance and support services on missing children cases.
Our 24-hour hotline, case management teams, forensic services, poster distribution, imaging, and age progression are here to support law enforcement's efforts to locate and safely recover missing children. As soon as the call comes in, we are prepared to provide a wide variety of resources and assistance.
This is an activation of the Amber Alert System.
Team Adam is retired law enforcement. It's our rapid response team.
They're actually deployed on site to provide services such as landfill searches, water searches, search and rescue, and many other services.
When a child has been missing for a long time, the National Center employs a team of forensic imaging specialists to help in these situations.
Our day-to-day job entails doing age progressions of long-term missing children, skull reconstructions, really anything digital that we can do to help law enforcement, we're here to serve.
Sometimes the last image of a child that we have is of someone that's very young or an infant. And what we're able to do with our technology using Heredity, Adobe Photoshop, we're able to create a more up-to-date image in order to assist an investigation and a lot of times get these children found.
Our call center receives sightings of missing children, reports of sexual exploitation, professionals seeking case assistance.
Is there anyone who he could be with?
And best of all, reunification assistance once a child is recovered. We partner with several sponsors who provide transportation and lodging free of charge for those who are in need.
Coping with the traumatic experiences of having a missing and or a sexually exploited child requires great courage.
The National Center offers support to victims and their families through the Family Advocacy Division. Social service professionals work proactively to offer support.
Any time a child is taken, it's going to require the hands of someone on the case and on the family that can help them move forward in as productive a way as they possibly can.
Prevention is the key to averting tragedy. At the National Center, we also operate many community outreach programs.
Hey, kids!
NetSmarts, a fun, free, interactive online children's program that teaches internet safety. The Take 25 campaign, encouraging parents to spend 25 minutes with their families discussing real world and online safety. And Code Adam, a program that works with thousands of businesses training and implementing missing child procedures.
The most important thing is to access the National Center's resources. There's one phone number to know, 1-800-THE-LOST.
The Case Analysis Unit distributes leads to law enforcement and missing children state clearinghouses. We also offer analytical support to law enforcement, social services, school officials, and the general public. And the Special Analysis Unit can provide assistance to law enforcement to locate noncompliant sex offenders, victims and suspects involved with child sex trafficking, and also provide statistical information via our research team.
The Exploited Children Division works with law enforcement and acts as a clearinghouse for leads, tips, and information about the sexual exploitation of children online through its cyber tip line.
At the end of the day, there is nothing that compares to finding out that a report that you sent out maybe 2-3 years ago led to a child being rescued and taken out of an abusive situation.
Welcome to the National Center.
The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has become the leading nonprofit organization in the U.S., working with law enforcement to address the problems of missing and sexually exploited children. Law enforcement is better trained and more effective than ever before. There are better laws and better technology. Parents are more aware, and yet there are still thousands of children who do not make it home each year, and more who fall victim to sexual exploitation. Clearly, much more needs to be done.
Today, more is being done to protect children than in any time in our nation's history. And as a result, more children are being brought safely home. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is a tool for you. We're here, so contact us. Thank you for watching.
Child safety doesn't end in May. It's a year-round commitment. Tweet, hashtag child safety, hashtag take 25, and do your part. And remember to hashtag 365, because with any epidemic, it happens year-round, including child safety. Yesterday, May 25th, was National Missing Children's Awareness Day. We took 25. At malls and other places across the country, log on to take25.org to see all of the pictures from events and everything with the campaign, and missingkids.com to learn about missing children in your area. If you see something, say something. And with that, we're going to end with our friend Brittany Kellogg, who celebrated a birthday this week. She'll always be our American Idol, and we end with her music, and you can learn more about her at brittanykellogg.com. Thank you, and have a great night.
And hold.